Tri-County Contracting, worry-free roofing, siding, and windows. To sign up for a free estimate, get info on their worry-free roof tune-up or their free yearly roof inspections, or to get an instant roof quote, visit them online at tricountycontractingwi.com.
Well, it's a lot easier to manage someone who's like, yeah, boss, here we go, ready to work, versus someone who's like, meh, I'm out at 5.
Yeah, and I think they do see work differently.
3:30.
Yeah.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee, this is Wisconsin's Morning News. Here's Eric Bilstad and Vince Petrano.
8:14 on this Wednesday morning, Wisconsin's Morning News, going to take you inside the workplace. Who is stepping up to lead the office of the future? It's not the new kids.
What would you say you do here?
Remember that? From Office Space, these consultants talking with an employee at the office who is completely checked out.
The thing is, Bob, it's not that I'm lazy. It's that I just don't care.
Don't care?
It's a problem of motivation, all right?
So after all that, these guys decide checked out, uncaring guy actually seems like a great fit for being right in charge.
I'd like to move us right along to a Peter Gibbons. Now, we had a chance to meet this young man, and boy, that's just a straight shooter with upper management written all over him.
Talking about this today, because I read this article in The Independent. It's called Conscious Unbossing, At Last a Gen Z Buzz Phrase We Can All Get on Board With. First line from the article, the term sounds suspiciously Orwellian, or like something Gwyneth Paltrow may have coined, but it actually refers to a growing cohort of young people in the workplace who refuse to climb the management ladder, seemingly content to shun promotion. What is this about? Bring in friend of the program, president and managing partner at LAK Group, local business consulting firm, Mike Grubich is here. Morning, Mike.
Good morning, everyone. How are you?
So I love when I sent this over to Mike because we check in with Mike from time to time on these workplace issues. Love to get his take on it. We've had the quiet quitters, the coffee badgers, and now the conscious unbossers. So I sent this to Mike and he's like, oh yeah, I want to talk about this. So is this something, A, that you're seeing, and B, really, really, what are we talking about here?
Yeah, definitely seeing it. I think what, you know, we, all the generations, older generations, I'm Generation X, we always like to knock on the generations below
us. Of course.
Right? It's just a common thing. But I think they have it right here, you know, in that why should I do something that I don't want to do? Let me do things that I enjoy. I mean, we wrote a book about leadership on purpose, people going into leadership because they value it. They see their position there and their purpose there. If my purpose is to design agriculture equipment, let me do it if I like doing it. Or if I want to be a nurse, just let me be a nurse or a teacher. So I think this generation has it. The other side of this coin is, though, what experiences are we creating in the workplace that are turning people off from this? You know, our brain works on narratives, and you know, our experiences shape our beliefs that drive our behavior. And if we see stress, thankless work, or the manager that we report to isn't really good, why would I want to go into that? So it plays on both sides here, and there's so many opportunities for both.
Talking with Mike Grubich of LAK Group about conscious unbossers. Okay, fine. I get why they don't want to do it. Frankly, I'm with them on that. I don't want to be in charge of stuff. I want to do this. I want to be on the radio.
Yep.
Eric was kind of pseudo in charge. You were like news director for a while,
yeah,
also
in
here.
Yeah.
And that was, you were spending a lot less time in here applying the trade that you wanted to do, and a lot more time doing schedules
and things like that. And working with, in developing and leading people and all that stuff. And I guess what I always told folks who are, I guess, younger than us, who were asking me about going into management, either here locally or elsewhere, I would say you got to think about that, because it's different than just leadership. There's management and then there's leadership. They're
two different things.
Yep. And it's not always just about getting a fatter paycheck. There's a lot more involved with it. And maybe Gen Z already knows this, or are they just lazy?
Yeah, I'm an eternal optimist. I don't think they're lazy, right? I think they're more realistic and practical. I think they have access to so much more data than we ever had in our generation or generations prior to them. And so I think they're making quicker decisions, maybe not always strong database decisions, but decisions nonetheless. And they will act based on the experiences they've had. That youngest generation really values coaching and mentorship and those type of programs and organizations. And if they don't have it, then they get disconnected from what leadership really is or what it takes to be in that next level role in an organization. People don't always understand it. And so they stay away from it.
You say all the time, Mike, and I love this saying, is that people don't quit their job. They quit their managers, right? They quit their company leadership because they're not having a good experience. Given that, we have to have a next generation of leaders or managers in the workplace. So what's the fix here?
So the fix is organizations need to do two things. One, they got to continue to get better at developing their leadership in the middle. Right. Set good examples so that people admire that and want to strive to be that. The second is get better at assessing your people. And it's not just assessing their personality traits and their intelligence and their capability. Technically, it's assessing what are their aspirations? What do they want to do? And in organizations, you can create dual career paths, those that are in the leadership path or those are just that are on the path of becoming just a great technical expert. Find out what people want, what's their true purpose, and help them get there. And if organizations do that, you're going to retain those people. They're going to love working for their manager. They're going to love working for that company. Because remember, one of the number one reasons people leave companies is they don't feel they have career satisfaction or career opportunity. That doesn't mean career growth in a VP role. It means career growth into what I want to do. And so focus on that, and you're going to retain and people, and they're going to enjoy working for you.
What if your middle manager is calling their mom or dad to help with the one-on-ones because they don't know how to do it themselves? So mom and dad are coming in and helping with that. I'm being facetious.
Sure.
But I think there is a little bit of that problem here. You know, there's this generation has gotten a lot more assistance as well as the data that it just seems to be able to glean that has made it a little bit easier to not always deal with conflict or have to make the tough decision because of maybe mom or dad or grandma.
Yeah. And that is, so hopefully I'm answering your question correctly here, but to me, organizations, they have this Oreo cookie mindset, right? And that's, I want to put a lot of resources developing our senior executives and our high potentials. And I want to do a good job onboarding, which are good things. Don't get me wrong. They forget the mushy middle. Right, and they don't commit the resources to developing those hundreds, and some companies, thousands of leaders. They give them a coffee mug, say you've been promoted, read this book, and on Monday, boom, you're a leader, right? And they don't spend the time to develop them. So I think organizations need to put more emphasis on that.
Talking with Mike Grubich at LAK Group. It's a local business consulting firm seeing this conscious unbossing in our area and in companies all over. So another thing, and this is more comic than anything, I wonder if Gen Z just knows Gen Z and they don't want to lead themselves because they know their buddies and like, I don't want to be in charge of this guy who isn't committed to work, who doesn't share the work ethic that maybe some of the generations on top have. Yeah. There is a different work ethic and it's harder to manage people who, like our guy, an example from Office Space, and like, I don't really care that much about my job. Right. Like, this is where I work. They see work differently than us Gen Xers and beyond. It's kind of like this is, and COVID had something to do with that as well. This is not my end all be all moving up the ladder at work. And I'm not saying whether it's good or bad. It's just, boy, it's a lot easier to manage someone who's like, yeah, boss, here we go, ready to work.
Yeah.
Versus someone who's like, meh, I'm out at 5.
Yeah. And I think they do see work differently.
3:30.
Yeah. Nap pod at noon.
Right. Yes.
You know,
hour lunch.
Beanbag. Look at that beanbag.
I think they see work differently. And that's on them. And I think it's on leadership in organizations, right? You have to, if you create a workplace that has that inspirational element or people feel valued, they shift, they change their mindset. I in my career, I've worked with so many people that to one leader, they were not a good employee. We need to get them out of here. You pick them up and you move them to another leader, another function, another role, and all of a sudden they're a star, right? You got to just find fit. And everyone has a space. Everyone has something that they're good at. I think genuinely people want to do things well. I can't say that I've met hardly, maybe on one hand of people in my life that want to just be bad at something. you got to find that fit, and it'll work. Yeah, you know, to bring a old claymation movie quote in, Hermie the Elf wanted to be a dentist, not a toy maker, right? Let him be a dentist. So if you don't be a toy maker, if you don't want to be a toy maker, be a dentist.
And by all accounts, he was a good dentist.
Yeah.
Right? So solved that abominable snowman problem.
Right.
Right. Right.
Really did a good job.
So it's people genuinely want to do, they want to enjoy what they're doing, and they want to work on something that is purposeful to them. So find that. And if you can do that as an organization, and if you can do that as an employee or a professional, then the magic happens.
Mike Grubich over at LAK Group. The website is transformingcareers.com. Mike and his team also place a lot of stuff that you can read and enjoy and learn from for free right there on the website if you're interested in these leadership development issues and all of that in the workplace. Thanks, Mike. Always great to see you.
Oh, my pleasure. I enjoy it.
8:24 on Wisconsin's Morning News.
Israel is vowing retaliation to Hezbollah militants following an Iranian attack on Israel on Tuesday. Much of Hezbollah is based in Lebanon. The Israeli military is now urging residents in dozens of towns in southwest Lebanon right now to move north, move further into the country ASAP. This as more than 6,000 Americans in Lebanon have now registered with the U.S. Embassy there to potentially leave the country. Comes after Israel launched new attacks targeting Iranian-backed fighters, striking Hezbollah militants in Beirut.
CBS News can confirm that Israeli commandos are mounting limited incursions into Lebanon ahead of an expected ground invasion of Lebanon.
CBS News correspondent Chris Lives say there he's following this in Tel Aviv. It comes after what we said was the largest ever ballistic missile attack on Israel. It had the Gulf War reminders to it when you watched it on TV Tuesday. Everyone had it on. Iran launching an air assault over major cities in Israel, firing more than 200 missiles.
Israel's ambassador told the United Nations Israel will decide when and how it will respond.
It will be noticed. It will be painful.
Yeah. So when will this happen? That's the next question. And how big would it be?
Right. What does it look like?
Right. Martha Raddatz trying to get some details.
My sources tell me they don't really know what Israel is going to do. They're waiting. They will probably get some sort of heads up before they respond. But they are worried about how broad a response. I don't think they're concerned at this point that they will hit nuclear sites, but it is certainly possible. But given the fact there was not major damage, they're hoping that Israel tamps it down.
So will Israel tamp it down? Given the fact that the damage from the attack on Tuesday was minimal, does that change your tactics? Either way, they're going to retaliate. They've already said so.
And you hear the word escalation, the concerns about escalation, trying to contain things from escalating, trying to keep things from flaring up. You know, this is why, and we banter around the term World War III. We're going to have World War III too loosely. But this is why a World War III concern is legitimate and out there. Think of the entities that you mentioned. You mentioned Hezbollah. They are based in Lebanon. Hamas, based in Gaza. That's the other front that Israel is fighting war on. You have the Houthis in Yemen, all of them tied to Iran. Iran's only friend on the global stage, at least publicly, seems to be Russia. Who does Russia pal around with? China and North Korea. Like, think of all the entities that might have an interest in this fight that's all centered there in the Middle East. So when we talk about, you know, is there a potential for World War III here? Whoa.
Well, so what's the end? See, this is where I always go back to what was, you know, just like Hamas last October, what was Hamas expecting to have happen? What was Iran expecting to have happen after doing what it did on Tuesday? They're thinking beyond Tuesday, right? I mean, so what?
Right. What is your long game here?
What do you expect? You think Israel's just going to be like, oh, and yawn? No, Israel will retaliate unless that's what you're looking for. It's not going to go well. Regardless, you're going to be upset because something will happen unless Iran is forced to retaliate because that Hezbollah leader was killed. So this is just their belief of, well, at least we're showing that we're retaliating because we have to show that we're doing something because they have to know Israel's going to swing back.
It's how quickly things spiral. And again, U.S. officials trying to keep them from spiraling out of control at this point. 8:33 on Wisconsin's Morning News. 8:41 on Wisconsin's Morning News. Going to play you a few clips from the debate on Tuesday night. Vice presidential candidates, Governor of Minnesota, Tim Walz, and Senator of Ohio, J.D. Vance. I thought it was interesting. Where were you reading that? Was it a survey result where it suggested that folks who had watched the debate thought, actually, both of these candidates might be better on the top of the ticket?
No, we got a couple of texts saying, hey, you know what? It would be nice if these two were running together, even though they're different in many ways, that they would be better together as the ticket.
I feel that's very often a common theme coming off of the vice presidential debate, whether the suggestion is they run together or like, actually, I like both of these two better than the other. that happens from time to time. I think often it's because the debate tends to be more cordial for whatever reason. And that's largely one of the reviews that comes of that 90-minute contest between Governor Walz and Senator Vance. One interesting moment, since we've been talking a lot about Israel today, right in the front of things, because you had the attack from Iran on Israel. What would you do about it? What would you support in terms of a preemptive strike in Iran if Israel were going to do that? Let me give you one cut from Senator Walz here. Or sorry, Governor Walz.
But what's fundamental here is that steady leadership is going to matter. It's clear, and the world saw it on that debate stage a few weeks ago, a nearly 80-year-old Donald Trump talking about crowd sizes is not what we need in this moment.
So Governor Walz took a bunch of his time on that particular question to just say, look, the other guy over there is not the kind of leader that you want in these sort of situations. What's interesting is Senator Vance turned the tables exactly on him, saying that Trump's time in office, things were better.
Much as Governor Walz just accused Donald Trump of being an agent of chaos, Donald Trump actually delivered stability in the world, and he did it by establishing effective deterrence. People were afraid of stepping out of line. Iran, which launched this attack, has received over $100 billion in unfrozen assets thanks to the Kamala Harris administration. What do they use that money for? They use it to buy weapons that they're now launching against our allies.
So that was the issue of what's going on in the Middle East, and basically both turning it into a leadership question on the issue of climate change. And folks talked about how these two were deferential to one another. Senator Vance kept calling Governor Walz Tim. No, Tim, I don't know. And I didn't notice Governor Walz calling him JD, but he was also polite. And there were a couple of points where he said, well, we actually kind of agree on this, but top of the ticket, they don't agree on that. Yeah. So climate change was one of those issues. Let me give you J.D. Vance on that.
A lot of people are justifiably worried about all these crazy weather patterns. I think it's important for us, first of all, to say Donald Trump and I support clean air, clean water. We want the environment to be cleaner and safer. But one of the things that I've noticed some of our Democratic friends talking a lot about is a concern about carbon emissions, this idea that carbon emissions drives all of the climate change. Well, let's just say that's true, just for the sake of argument, so we're not arguing about weird science. Let's just say that's true. Well, if you believe that, what would you want to do? The answer is that you'd want to reshore as much American manufacturing as possible, and you'd want to produce as much energy as possible in the United States of America, because we're the cleanest economy in the entire world.
So Governor Walz making the claim that actually that's what the Biden-Harris administration was already doing.
Senator Vance has said that there's a climate problem in the past. Donald Trump called it a hoax and then joked that these things would make more beachfront property to be able to invest in. What we've seen out of the Harris administration now, the Biden-Harris administration, is we've seen this investment. We've seen massive investments, the biggest in global history that we've seen in the Inflation Reduction Act, has created jobs all across the country. 2000 in Jeffersonville, Ohio, taking the EV technology that we invented and making it here. 200,000 jobs across the country. The largest solar manufacturing plant in North America sets in Minnesota. But my farmers know climate change is real. They've seen 500-year droughts, 500-year floods back to back.
The thing you're going to hear most about, however, today, think is about, once again, the moderators and the manner in which the debate was administered. CBS News did the debate this time. The moderators were Margaret Brennan and Nora O'Donnell. Nora's nightly news anchor, right? CBS
yes.
Nightly News.
Yep.
And the two of them, or CBS and both campaigns, had agreed at the onset there was not going to be fact-checking this time. ABC News was criticized, particularly from the right, for jumping in on and fact-checking former President Trump, The accusation was they didn't do enough, if any, fact-checking of Vice President Harris. The counter from the Harris campaign was, well, we didn't lie as much. Okay, fine. Without regard to that, CBS said, we're going to step out of that business.
Let's have a debate. And let them fact-check each other.
Exactly. If these two want to say, hey, he's lying about my record, that's fine. You'll have rebuttal time and whatever. But our moderators are not going to step in and add things to the debate. Except for they couldn't help themselves, and they did.
And just to clarify for our viewers, Springfield, Ohio does have a large number of Haitian migrants who have legal status, temporary protected status.
Well, Margaret, but
thank you, Senator. We have so much to get to.
Margaret, I think it's important
we're
because
we're going to turn out of the economy. Debate, thank
Margaret,
you.
Margaret, the rules were that the you economy, guys weren't going to fact check, and since you're fact checking me, I think it's important to say what's actually going on. So there's an application called the CBP One app.
So Senator Vance then went on to describe like why he was suggesting, or specifically what type of immigrants he was talking about, in his case illegal, and how one who might have come here legally or illegally might obtain legal status, et cetera. Without regard for that, his point was, you all said you weren't going to fact check. Now you're jumping in, and now you're cutting my mic, and you won't let me respond. So from the left, what they're saying is, how'd you like to be the candidate who's opposed to fact checking because you lie so much? That's how they see that moment.
Of course, that's the spin on one side. Right. And then the spin on the other
is, oh, again, you're fact-checking only one side, yeah. And oh, by the way, when my guy tries to explain why you're actually wrong on the fact-check, then you cut his mic. So both sides will settle in those camps on that particular moment, but it was an interesting one.
I don't know how it ever gets fixed.
Yet there was an exchange later between, and I can't remember what the topic was, I believe it was on abortion, and Senator Vance is trying to characterize Governor Walz's abortion stance as extreme, and he's talking about a specific law in Minnesota, and Governor Walz says, no, that's not true, that's not what the law says, and Vance goes back at him and says, well, what part wasn't true? What specifically did I just say that wasn't true? And whatever, and so that's a way where that format can play out and allow the two of them that interplay to say, okay, you said this is a lie, tell me what I was lying about, or vice versa. This is a lie, whatever. And you keep the moderators out of it. They just administer the debate.
Yeah, you know what? One of the biggest hot topics is going to be now in the next couple of days. You're hearing it here first. What's going to be all the talk, all eyes will be on, if you will. 60 Minutes. CBS's 60 Minutes they do this every 4 years. They have their big show before the election where they have a half hour with one candidate. They have a half hour with the other candidate. And they do this. They've done this, for 50 something.
Since years. Ever, right?
Yeah. And on Monday is when they're airing it. And CBS is now announcing that Trump is out. Said he will not do it. See, they both had agreed to it. It's not a debate. It's just,
is it because of this?
This was announced before the debate.
Okay.
So both sides, according to 60 Minutes, had accepted, and it was going to be Scott Pelley interviewing the former president. The campaign, though, now is deciding it will not participate. Pelley will address it on Monday evening when the big show is aired for the first time. So you can hear a lot about this, that why would Trump pull out, and you'll hear the spin on both sides, but that'll be a big talking point here coming up, is one of the most traditional, historic 60 Minutes things they've done since the beginning of time will not happen this year.
10 minutes before 9 o'clock.
WTMJ, W277CV, and WKTI HD2 Milwaukee from the Annex Wealth Management Studios. This is News Radio WTMJ, a Good Karma brand station.
WTMJ forecast sponsored by Dave Dre Camp Heating, where your comfort is their family's tradition. Perfect day today, sunny high of 71 degrees, clear skies overnight. Low of 47 degrees away from Lake Michigan, a little bit warmer if you're on the lake shore, and mostly sunny for Thursday, high of 75 degrees. Great tailgating weather, going to need you.
Oh, it'll be a packed house tonight.
Well, it has to be more than packed. It has to be packed and loud. Like guys need us to pick them up.
So bring the energy no matter what.
I guess. Now, it was hard. I was there last night, and it was hard. After that fifth inning, like, we had taken the lead, and then we come back in the fifth, and then...
Now, remember the last time when they were playing the Diamondbacks a couple of weeks ago, and they were down 8-0, and the place started booing?
Yeah.
And Pat Murphy said, hey, that snapped him in. That actually worked out. The guys heard that,
So boo before even the national anthem tonight. Or
so no, but I guess my question is, could that have? And I'm never suggesting that. I'm never suggesting booing. But he did say it worked when they were down big to the Diamondbacks.
I don't think they'll need the reminder tonight. They know. I mean, you have to win today or there is no tomorrow.
Let's do it tomorrow.
There is no tomorrow. There is no tomorrow.
See? Apollo Creed, that's good advice.
Again.
Come on, Rock.
Creed is no longer with us. Well, the character is killed in the actual movie.
But his point well taken.
You don't like, literally win today. Is no tomorrow
there is
for Creed.
No tomorrow.
You're right.
Well, I don't think our guys are going to die. They're just not going to have another game.
I think they play tomorrow. I think tomorrow does exist. Big win tonight. And then the buzz returns.
Got to. And then you're the Mets, and then you can be tired and all that stuff. All I heard yesterday from fans in the parking lot, from fans in the stadium, well, I'm sure glad it wasn't the Diamondbacks. Didn't want to play them again. Didn't want to play the Diamondbacks. Didn't want to play Arizona. Boy, Padres are good, too. But the Mets, we got this. So let's get it tonight.
Yeah, it'll happen. This team is resilient. Undaunted.
Undaunted. Yesterday, slightly daunted. Today, hopefully undaunted.
Yeah.
6:38 is the first pitch. Our broadcast time just before 6 p.m. right here on your home of the Brewers, WTMJ.